Srila Prabhupada ki, Shri Bhaktiva Vedanta ki, Nirantara Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Giriraj Maharaj ki, Nijay Gopremanande. Okay, so tonight we'll do an overview of chapters 1 to 8 of Canto 8. And next Monday, between 7 and 9, we'll have our first open book exam for the year. And your closed book exams, open book exams are also due next Monday, with oral presentations completed. So, the first chapter of Canto 8 describes what? What is it called? The descendants of Manu. Okay. So, from Anto 3, 4, 5, and 6, we've heard about the descendants of which Manu? Swayambhuva Manu. Right. So then, having completed a description at the end of Canto 7 about all of the descendants, then Parikshit Maharaj, he wants to know about more Manus. So another 6 Manus are described. So then as this first chapter begins, then Parikshit Maharaj is enthusiastic to hear more and more. And that's why the Srimad Bhagavatam is a perfect shastra, a perfect scripture. Why is it perfect? Because the hearer is pure and the chanter is pure. Sukadeva Goswami is the best chanter, the best speaker of the Bhagavatam, the topmost reciter of the Bhagavatam. And Parikshit Maharaj is the best listener or hearer of the Bhagavatam. Therefore, the combination is perfect. And when the combination is perfect, when there is enthusiasm in the audience, and when the speaker is qualified and enthusiastic himself, then rasa is churned. So then rasa comes from the Bhagavatam. So then we want to hear on and on. Not that the subject matter becomes stale or hackneyed. In other words, we don't lose our taste for hearing more about the Bhagavatam. So Parikshit Maharaj, he wants to hear more. So then he is asking to hear more about the other manus. So Sukadeva Goswami begins to describe the other manus. And prayers are offered, as is done so often in this section of the Bhagavatam. There's a large section of prayers which are offered continuously. So the first chapter of the 8th canto, there's not a lot of philosophy there. It is mainly a recital of prayers, and then there is a description of the various manus and what will take place. So we hear about Swayambhuva Manu attaining perfection. He renounces the material world. He goes to the forest. He begins to offer his prayers. And then we hear the description of the other manus. That takes us to chapter 2. Now, what is chapter 2 called?
The Elephant Gajendra's Crisis.
What is it?
The Elephant Gajendra's Crisis.
The Elephant Gajendra's Crisis. Now, this chapter is very relevant for all of us. Why is it relevant?
Because of how to take shelter of the Lord when we are in danger.
Very good. Well, why else is it relevant to us?
The proper.
Very good. Yeah, these are important lessons. Why else?
It also teaches us to recite some prayers or mantras so that we can remember them and they will be carried forward with us. We can recite them to remember.
Very good. Good. Any other points?
This past time also teaches the goal of Krishna consciousness to remember Krishna.
Nice. Anything else?
The Lord is very close to us, and if we are in distress and if we call Him, He comes immediately.
Also, it teaches us to have developed faith in the Srimad Bhagavatam, because towards the start there is a lot of descriptions which are given, which materialistically we cannot, it will not make sense to us. But so it tests our faith, the description of the Srimad
Good.
It helps us to get detachment from the material bondage. Like nobody in the family can help us, family or friends, only Krishna.
Good.
If any senior devotees punishes you, then it is really good for us.
That's good.
Also so family life.
Family life.
All these are fallible soldiers. No, sorry, fallible soldiers. And therefore, should not depend on. They cannot save
the
time.
Good.
In the path of devotional service, there is no loss of recognition. He remembers from his previous life. The verse that he says was saying to the Lord, and then
good. So, what is the title of the chapter?
31st.
So, why is it relevant to us?
Because
our life is a crisis. Right? I just get out of the car tonight at the temple, and devotees start approaching me, and their life is in crisis, serious crisis. So, this is the nature of the material world. It is meant for suffering. It is an illusion to think you can be happy here, you can be peaceful here. So, we see that during the reign of the fourth Manu, the Lord protected Gajendra. So throughout this eighth canto, there are many, many incarnations or appearances of the Lord. Now, Gajendra, he was bewildered by the material energy. This is the nature of Maya. The nature of Maya is that we become bewildered very easily, and all of us are bewildered. We don't have much to be proud about, but we become attached to proud of nothing at all, practically. But that is the nature of Maya. Everyone is in Maya, and everyone is completely immersed in false thoughts of pride and identity that we can enjoy separately from Krishna. So, continuously, the Lord puts us into crisis to make us understand this is not actually our home. We don't belong here in this material world. It's a very difficult lesson to learn. Even when we go through a crisis, but then next week, then we forget about that and we try to enjoy separately from Krishna once again. And even when we're going through the crisis, we try to enjoy separately from Krishna. That is the nature of our illusion. So, Gajendra, he was completely bewildered. Because when you get, Prabhupada says, the two most powerful allurements of Maya is wealth and the opposite sex. So when you have association with the opposite sex, you become bewildered. That is why we are taught through the Varnashram system in ISKCON that we have to restrict our association with the opposite sex. Otherwise you become bewildered. And similarly, if you get too much wealth, you become bewildered. Therefore, if you get wealth, you should use it in Krishna's service. Just like there's one man, I can't remember his name, but a few years ago he became the richest man in the world for a period of time. He overtook Bill Gates and Steve Jobs and a few other people, just for a period of time. So even though he became the richest man in the world, means a multi-billionaire, but still He, even in the his wealthy state, he still kept the same wage that he'd had previously, which was $100,000 a year. So even though that's what he was receiving, but he received more, he just kept things simplistic. He did not become bewildered. Even though there were more opportunities for sense gratification, he did not succumb to it. So this is a good lesson for a devotee. This is the way a devotee should be. If we get more, we remain the same, we give more to Krishna. We just have enough to keep body and soul together, to live comfortably in Krishna's service. So wealth is intoxicating, and association with the opposite sex is also intoxicating. So Gajendra was fully intoxicated. He was just an ordinary conditioned soul, like all of us. We would also be intoxicated if we had many beautiful elephants around us also. We'd also become bewildered. So he became bewildered, which is just like we would. You know, if we had many women following us or many men following us, we'd also become bewildered. So he is bewildered. But then the Lord suddenly knows his entire situation. Now, the beginning of this chapter, chapter 2, it shows us many extraordinary descriptions, which are a great test of faith in our Krishna consciousness. We see many things which are extraordinary within the Bhagavatam. Fifth canto has many descriptions. Many descriptions of that. Prabhupada was describing the eagles which fly in between the planets. And we hear about the mangoes which are so big when they drop, rivers of mango juice form on the side of mountains. So we've heard many descriptions already within the Bhagavatam, which are meant to test our faith. So similarly, in this beginning chapter, it tests our faith. There are so many extraordinary descriptions which can never be verified or proven by empirical perception or knowledge. There's no proof. But we believe it. Why do we believe it? Yeah, we have faith because the Bhagavatam speaks truth. So why would this not be truth? Truth is spoken in so many other ways. Matter and spirit, the description of the difference between matter and spirit, that is truth. So when it describes extraordinary material circumstances, there's no reason to doubt these situations. The Bhagavatam is a coherent and perfect scripture which speaks about things which are beyond our perception. So, there is an extraordinary perception description, but then in the middle of that, Gajendra is attacked by a elephant. No, a crocodile. He is an elephant. And he is attacked by a huge crocodile. So, what is Krishna teaching him at that point? That's a little bit further on. But what's the first thing that we have to understand?
That is danger and every step. Danger and every step.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, the nature of the material world, it is temporary, it is limited by nature. Every situation you have will be taken away from you for sure. So don't get attached. Because everything is going to be taken away. Right? Everything gets taken away in this material world. You cannot keep anything in this material world. So in one moment, everything ended for Gajendra. Right? All of his security, all of his attachments were ripped away from him. And this can happen to any of us at any time. Whenever Krishna decides that's enough, then that is enough. There's nothing you can do. When Krishna starts taking things away, there's nothing you can do. You can't hold on. So this will happen to all of us at various points in time. Whenever Krishna is ready, he will begin to take everything away. But Gajendra, immediately he understood the situation. I've been foolish, everything is temporary, and I should just surrender to Krishna. So he did the right thing, because he was a pious living entity. So, Prabhupada explains the very famous purports in this chapter, and Prabhupada gives great elaboration in this chapter, that a devotee has to keep himself properly situated in this material world in order to progress in spiritual life. So we have to be situated in the correct vana and ashrama. Vana means you have to be doing the work which is best situated to your conditioned nature. Now, Prabhupada says your psychophysical makeup. Everyone has a particular conditioning in this material world. And in devotional service, each one of us is conditioned in a particular way. We have a particular nature. We have particular services which we are best at. So we need to understand, under the guidance of senior Vaishnavas and the gurus, what is the best service that we can render for Krishna. And then you use our natural talents and abilities in Krishna's service to become purified. If you are not properly situated according to your material conditioning, it is very difficult to progress in spiritual life. So you can't. We can't just say, because sometimes the way is to say, you just do devotional service, you'll become purified. In the conditioned stage, you have to perform devotional service, which is compatible with your material conditioning. So that is what the vana, system of vana is for, according to your particular nature. If you have more brahminical nature, you have to do brahminical service. If you have managerial ability, you have to do managerial service. Right? If you have ability to make money, then you have to act in that capacity. And if your nature is to assist everyone else, then you have to act in that capacity. So that is the nature of vana. And Prabhupada explains elaborately that this is necessary that devotees get properly situated. Otherwise you won't become purified. Very good example is Sataputta Prabhu. He was a brilliant scientist within ISKCON. He left his body a few years ago. So when he first joined the temple, what was the first service they gave him? He joined a new Vrindavan. So they gave him the service of digging the holes, because they were building. So no one asked him, who are you, what do you do? Right? He's a scientist. He's a brilliant personality, but they just got him digging the holes. So that is not the best use of that person's talent. That won't purify that person the best. Of course, the first few days you join the temple, you can do anything. But for years on end, if he just stays there digging holes, then it won't purify him and it won't be the best thing for the progress of the movement. So devotees have to be situated according to their natural abilities. So whatever we're good at in Krishna's service, that's what we need to do. Secondly, Prabhupada explains, we have to be situated in the proper ashrama. Right. So one who is in the Grihastha ashram, if he's in the renounced order of life, but he's more naturally suited to the Grihastha ashram, he will have difficulties. Right? And in the same way, one who is in the opposite situation, he will also have difficulties if he's not properly situated. So we have to understand what is our adhikar. Adhikar means our qualification. What are we meant for? What are we most suited to? Which ashrama? So according to vana and ashram, one must be properly situated in order to progress in spiritual life. You can't progress properly if you're not situated properly in the right ashram. Even though you're doing devotional service, your mind will be disturbed. And Krishna says in the third chapter of the Gita, you will be michacha. Michacha means pretending. You act like you're renounced, but you'll be thinking of sense gratification. So Prabhupada said, better to be a sincere and humble sweeper in the street than a charlatan meditator. Don't pretend to be something that you are not. So devotional service, our progress in devotional service is very much based upon being properly situated according to our conditioning in the material world. If you're not situated according to your conditioning properly, you cannot advance. Unless you're very advanced in Krishna consciousness, you don't have to worry about your external situations. But for the rest of us, it's very important to be properly situated. Now, Prabhupada explains that Gajendra began to lose the fight against the crocodile. Why was he losing the fight? Because he's not in his natural element. Right? So Prabhupada draws a very good example from this situation with Gajendra. He was powerful, He may have defeated the crocodile normally, but he could not defeat him in this situation because he wasn't situated properly in the right element for him. He's in the water, so he became weaker in that situation instead of stronger. So Prabhupada explains that we have to be situated properly in the right situation to progress in Krishna consciousness. Now when Prabhupada was writing this, Madhudwija Prabhu, who was a sannyasi disciple of Prabhupada and was the GBC of this temple and the GBC of Australia at the time, he was having troubles. And he left the sannyas ashram. And he went to the grihastha ashram. And Prabhupada did not mind. Prabhupada said that, and he's saying in these purports, that if it's too difficult in one situation, then you go to the other situation. And fight Maya where you can be strong in Krishna consciousness. Same thing happened earlier, now before Madhudwija Prabhu left the sannyas ashram, then Bali Madan, who was also one of the early devotees here in Australia, he began this Australia, his first devotee to come here to Australia to preach Krishna consciousness. Then same thing. He was sannyas, Prabhupada gave him sannyas. He had difficulty, so then Prabhupada married him. You see, there's a video. You can see the video. Prabhupada does the yajna, right? And he marries him. So Prabhupada does not reject him, because it says within the Shastra, if a sannyasi goes back to grihastha life, he eats his own vomit. So he's considered... Vantasi. Or he's considered... like... it's deplorable.
Abominable.
Yeah, it's considered very... but Prabhupada accepted that. No? Prabhupada accepted, no, this person needs to be situated properly in Krishna consciousness. And Prabhupada did not reject, but he encouraged him in devotional service. So this is the lesson which is being taught, which Prabhupada brings out expertly from this section of the Bhagavatam. You must be properly situated. Similarly, Prabhupada said, we have to remain healthy and fit in Krishna consciousness. As we've said many times, how did Prabhupada finish his letters? Prabhupada would always say, you're ever well-wisher. But before he said that, what would he always say? I hope this meets you in good health. Prabhupada would write that every time. Thousands of letters. I hope this meets you in good health. And Prabhupada said to Dhananjaya Prabhu, he said, health first, then Krishna consciousness. Because if your body and your mind is not healthy, how can you serve Krishna? What's it like trying to serve Krishna when you're sick? It's very pleasant, isn't it? Very enjoyable. Right? So it's very challenging. What's it like trying to serve Krishna when your mind is disturbed? It's like trying to chant your rounds when your mind is disturbed. Very difficult. So Prabhupada said, remain fit and healthy in Krishna's service. Look after your body, look after your mind, so that you can serve Krishna properly. So that is the instruction. That is not Maya, to look after the body. Prabhupada was looking after the body every day. Morning walk, every day. Come downstairs, Prabhupada would come downstairs, get in the car, drive over to Botanical Gardens, go for a walk. Many, many, many times he walked through the gardens and then came back. Right? And then every day, midday, massage. 1 hour. Sometimes hour and a half, I think. Massage every day. And then massage in the evening also. Right? So Prabhupada was looking after the health. Right? Every morning he would call in the Mataji's who were cooking for him. And he would discuss what they would cook today. Which spices, what would be cooked. Right? All the spices had to be hand ground that day. Turmeric was hand ground. Prabhupada would not take powdered spice. Prabhupada also instructed that all the deities in ISKCON should have fresh ground spices every day. No powdered spice. There's only a few temples in the world that follow that, but that was Prabhupada's instruction. So we have to look after the health. So Prabhupada is saying here, you have to remain fit and strong. You can fight with Maya, because Maya is very powerful. Just like last week at the farm, we had the Holi festival. Hands up if you came for the festival. Hands up if you enjoyed the festival. Good, because I'm totally wiped out. Festival totally wiped me out. I'm so tired, right? And then on the weekend we had a wood chop at the farm. So just when I was recovering my strength, then I'm totally wiped out again. But then what happens is the mind becomes weak. Right? When you're too tired, it's hard to control the mind. So that is, Prabhupada says, that we have to remain fit and healthy in Krishna's service. It has to be a balance. I don't know how to get a balance in ISKCON. I'm thinking of joining the Buddhist ashram, which is just around the corner. Because I think that's more peaceful. But Prabhupada's saying, in general, we have to be fit, we have to be healthy in Krishna's service. Keep the body and mind strong and healthy so that you can serve Krishna nicely. So, Gajendra, he was losing strength. And Prabhupada explains that when something happens for a devotee in his life, he sees that incident as being an arrangement of Krishna. In other words, fate is Krishna. Our destiny is Krishna. When something happens in our life which we have no control of, that is Krishna arranging that. Just like Gajendra, right, he was put into a very difficult situation, but he saw that this is an arrangement by Krishna to bring me closer to him. So we also have to learn to see like this. Whenever Krishna is making some difficulty in our life, it is to bring us closer to him. So actually for a devotee, everything which is negative is positive. Because he sees that everything is Krishna's arrangement just to bring me closer to him. So Gajendra, he passed the test. Because what did he do? As soon as the difficulty came, he remembered Krishna. Right? And what do the non-devotees do? Right? When the difficulty comes, right? Sometimes they remember Krishna, sometimes they reject God altogether, sometimes they take shelter of sense gratification or intoxication to try to dull the effect. I saw my father when he left the body. Right? He was taking intoxication, right? Just drinking and drinking, just to try to dull the situation, the reality that death is imminent. So this is not the way to deal with it. A devotee does not deal like this. A devotee understands everything is coming from Krishna. It is an opportunity from Krishna to surrender to him more fully. So Gajendra shows us a perfect example because he saw the difficulty was coming from Krishna, and what did he do? He tolerated. So we also have to tolerate, because death is not a pleasant experience. Being alive is not a pleasant experience. So imagine what death must be like. Right? It is horrible. Not pleasant. But he tolerated the situation. And it was a very difficult death. Imagine being eaten by an alligator. Very difficult. But he was tolerant and he was equipoised and he stayed fixed on Krishna. And Prabhupada explains that when we surrender to Krishna, Tesham Satata Yuktanam Bhajatam Priti Purvakam Dadami Buddhi Yogam Tam Yenamam Upayantite. Krishna says that if you are surrendering unto me, I will give you the intelligence by which to remember me. So Gajendra was given the Dadami Buddhi Yoga. Krishna says, I give the intelligence. So then how did he remember Krishna? He remembered prayers that he had offered in the previous life or learned in the previous life. He had not remembered shlokas in the elephant form. Do we see any elephants coming on Saturday for the kids' shloka classes? Right. The animals will not come. So he's not remembering in this life. It was from the previous life. But in the previous life, he remembered. So Krishna gave him intelligence. Jnanam smritir apohanam cha. Krishna says, I will give you remembrance. I will let you remember me. If you are sincere, I will give you the ability to remember me once again. So he got the intelligence in which he could remember Krishna once again. And he recited prayers. And he surrendered to Krishna. And then what took place? Right, Narayan himself came. Right, the Lord himself came. And this is what will also happen to us. If we are surrendering to Krishna, Krishna will also, he will appear. He will come. Krishna himself will come. So this is the test. If we remember Krishna at the time of death, Krishna will appear. So then what is chapter 3 called? What's that? Gajendra's prayers of surrender. So he offers many, many prayers. So practically the whole chapter is prayers by Gajendra. Now, Prabhupada points out that kirtanam or chanting leads to smaranam, remembrance. Now what is the ultimate instruction for all of us in Krishna consciousness? Always remember Krishna, never forget Krishna. That is called smaranam. Smaranam. We're meant to remember Krishna. How much of the day do you remember Krishna?
All the time.
All the time. Very good. We have to remember Krishna all the time. That is the point. So how do we remember Krishna all the time? But what leads us to remember Krishna all the time? How do we attain the point of perfect smarana? Shravanam kirtanam. Vishnu smaranam. Right? So remembering Krishna relies upon constant hearing and chanting. So you have to hear and chant 24 hours a day. So when you're not chanting, you're hearing. You see the devotees always going around with their... You can't even talk to anyone anymore. Right? Whenever you speak to someone, they can't hear you because they're listening to a lecture. Devotees are always hearing about Krishna. And when they're not hearing, they're chanting about Krishna. What is the point of doing all of this? Just like one devotee said to me the other day, the astrologer said, I have only 5 years to live. So I have to read all the Bhagavatam and all the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So I said, very good. But I said, what is the point of doing that? What's the point of reading the whole thing? Lord Chaitanya went to South India. He saw the Brahmana. And the Brahmana could not even read the Bhagavad Gita. But Lord Chaitanya saw that he had reached the perfection of the Bhagavad Gita, which is Mamana Bhavama, always remember Krishna. So we're all about chanting if we're not remembering Krishna. So that is the point. That Gajendra, he suddenly became perfect. In his previous life, he took so many prayers. And then, at the time of death, he remembered everything, all his hearing and chanting, it paid off. And he remembered Krishna at the time of death. That is the point. So we are also meant to remember Krishna at the time of death, and also during the class if we stay awake. Because if you're asleep, you cannot remember Krishna, unless you're very advanced. Best to stay awake. So, it is explained that there were four types of pious people in the 7th chapter of the Gita, Krishna mentions. Four kinds of pious people, they surrender to Krishna. One is distressed, one is after wealth, one is inquisitive, one is searching after knowledge. So each of the groups is personified by a particular personality. So someone who wanted wealth, that was? Dhruva Maharaj. He wanted opulence, but he got Krishna. And then someone who was inquisitive? Everyone is wrong. Who was inquisitive? Sages of Naimisharanya. Right? They were inquisitive. They wanted to know. Right? And then who was it that wanted to know the absolute truth? The four Kumaras. Right? They wanted to know the absolute truth. Alright? And then who was the person who was distressed? That was? Gajendra. So why did we come to Krishna consciousness? Jiva Goswami says that if someone is coming because they are in distress, that means they are Shudra. If someone is coming because they want wealth, that means they are Vaishya. If someone is coming because they are inquisitive, that means they are Kshatriya. And if someone is coming because they want knowledge, that means they are
Brahmana.
So why did we come? Which of the four reasons? What brought you to Krishna consciousness? I know why I came is because I was suffering. I was in distress, therefore. So regardless of what your motivation is, we should come to Krishna. So Gajendra was distressed, but he came to Krishna. So he shows us perfectly what to do with our lives. Even if we're in distress, we should surrender to Krishna. Don't avoid surrendering to Krishna. But approach Krishna even when you're in distress. And Krishna will deliver you. Yeah, if you read the Nectar of Devotion, when it has those four, that's the list that which is given by Rupa Goswami. So. There's other people, it doesn't mean only those four, but it means they're the four examples which are given.
When the four Kumaras inquisitive, they wanted to see the Lord?
Yeah, but they were searching after knowledge, they were Brahmavadis. So they wanted to know what is the truth. So many prayers are offered, and in the final prayer, Prabhupada quotes the, or he mentions the prayer of Queen Kunti. And Queen Kunti, she prays that let the calamities come again and again in our devotional service. And this is advanced consciousness. When will we become so advanced that we ask for the calamities to come again and again? Hands up if you pray like that.
If I can get Krishna.
Hands up if you pray like that.
If I can get Krishna, I'll
be. Okay. You're in a third category. But.
Okay.
But hands up if you pray like that. Actually, I experience my life. I'm more Krishna conscious when I'm in distress. I experience that. When I'm in distress, I'm in more Krishna consciousness. And I understand that when Krishna is putting me in distress, I'm more Krishna conscious. But I'm not praying to him yet to say, give me more, give me more. Even though I know it's true. But I don't pray. I know it's true and I know it's good for me. But I'm still not praying, please do it. Like that. But the advanced devotees, they pray like that. Please give me distress. Make it difficult for me. So that is Queen Kunti, that is the height. So they're very advanced devotees, even when they're in great distress, still they remember Krishna. Okay, what is the fourth chapter called? Gajendra returns to the spiritual world. So in the beginning of the chapter, there is a description of the previous lives of Gajendra and the crocodile. So who was the crocodile? He was? Hoo-hoo. Right? And who was Hoo-hoo?
Gandharva king.
A Gandharva king. And what happened? He was cursed. Why?
He had hit the person, one of the sadhu who was taking bath nearby.
He laughed at someone.
Durvasha Muni. It was Durvasha Muni.
No, that's the curse of Indrajumna. He was cursed to Vasa.
Wasn't it Agastya?
No. They would only put the leg while he was taking bath in the river. Then the moon cursed. He was like a crocodile.
So become a crocodile. Okay. And then it describes that Gajendra was?
Indrajumna.
And what did he do? Yeah. So, once again, the Bhagavatam is teaching us a very important lesson. And that very important lesson is, do not commit Vaishnav Aparada. So what did Indrajumna Maharaj fail to do? He failed to offer proper respect when a great personality came. So when someone comes to your home, you have to offer them all the respect. Atithi Bhagavan. Atithi. Atithi means unexpected. Bhagavan means who is Bhagavan?
God.
It means God. What happens if God knocks on your door? You open the door and say, sorry, I can't get to you right now because I'm in the middle of something. Immediately, you will serve. So that is the culture. And if we do not receive people properly, if we do not offer respect to people appropriately, other devotees, other people, we commit aparad. And if we commit aparad, we get reactions. And you see how severe these reactions are. That's why the Bhagavatam, in every canto practically, there are pastimes going on and on and on and on again and again. To just, and it happens in the next canto as well, canto 9. Right? Just before we get to canto 10, nearly the final thing which is said in the canto is be very careful of Vaishnava aparad. Every canto. And it's an important theme in the Bhagavatam. Right? Stop offending devotees. Right? Offenses to devotees are on three levels. Right? Physical, right? Which we don't do very often. Hopefully we don't ever do it. Right? But then the next one is verbal, which we do quite often. Right? And the next one is mental, which you do practically all day. Right? So we're always offending devotees. So if you offend devotees, you will get reactions. Right? Right? You don't get reactions in Kali Yuga for thinking things in the mind. Why? Yeah, because we'd all be dead. Right? We'd all last one day in the temple. Because we commit so many offenses in the mind all the time. We're such fault finders that Krishna would destroy us. Our reactions would destroy us. So we don't get the reactions. But the problem is, if you don't stop thinking it, then it comes out in other ways.
I think we still get the reactions when we think. First we get unhealthy. Everyone who has unhealthy thoughts, he will have unhealthy body because you block the couple of energy, good energies. You cut yourself.
Yeah, it's good.
You get sick.
Good point. Very good. Yeah, that's true. It's a very good point. And if we don't stop thinking negative things, then we won't stop doing negative things and saying negative things. Right? And it's a very difficult thing to give up, criticizing devotees. Very difficult. Right? We criticize devotees all day long. Right? In our mind, and then we say things which are inappropriate. When another devotee is not there, then we say it. But someone who is an honourable person, then, if the other person is not there, then they will not say that thing. They will only say directly to the person. So generally, then you won't say a negative thing. And then you have to learn to change your thoughts. Instead of looking for faults, look for positive things. Right, if you look for positive things in devotees, then You'll say positive things, you'll do positive things, and your spiritual life will become auspicious. So Indrajumna committed a big mistake and he took birth as an elephant. Very difficult situation.
But is it really his fault? He didn't know.
He didn't know what?
That the other sages, he was meditating.
No, that's a different one. This is the one with Durvasa, where he offended. He actually knew he offended Durvasa. Indrajumna. Is it Agastya? Okay. Agastya. The basic point is don't offend devotees. That's the basic point. Okay. And then what is chapter 5 called?
The demigods appeal to the Lord for protection.
Mm-hmm. The demigods are appealing to the Lord for protection. Okay, that's where the Devasa comes in. Okay, the demigods, they lose their power because they once again they offend Devasa Muni. So once again they commit an offense. And what happens when you commit offenses? Your life becomes shorter, your wealth becomes less, inauspicious things take place in your life. So many negative things will happen. Big list. And if you praise the devotees, your life becomes longer, your wealth becomes greater. So many auspicious things happen in your life. Hands up if you want to become rich. Right? Then just praise devotees. It says in the Bhagavatam, when you do these positive things, you become wealthy. So you want to become rich, you're working so hard, you can retire early, just praise devotees. You don't have to go to work. So this is the system. If you want auspicious things, then you praise the devotees. And if you want inauspicious things, then you just criticize devotees. And this is what happened, that the demigods, they offended Devasa, they lost their position in the heavenly planets. And when they lost their position, they went to Lord Brahma. Right? Then they began to offer prayers. Brahma began to offer prayers. And at the end of the chapter, end of chapter 5, the Lord appears and he says, we will go to the ocean of milk. And we will begin to churn. And then the demigods will receive their position once again. But the Lord has an entire pastime which needs to take place. So what is the next chapter? The demigods and the demons declare a truce. Now, the demigods and demons come together. So there are important instructions here. That as devotees, we're in the material world and we're surrounded by non-devotees. They're everywhere. So then, what do? We have to learn how to deal with the non-devotees. To get the best result. So the demigods had to come to the demons. And they had to make some truce with the demons. Normally they would not work with the demons because they're inauspicious. Normally we don't like to associate with the non-devotees. But we can associate with the non-devotees if they can assist us in spreading Krishna consciousness. So the demigods, they made a truce with the demons. And then they went to the ocean of milk. So they had to pick up, first of all, what's the mountain called? Mandara Mountain. Yeah. And what is the Mandara Mountain made of? Right, pure gold. So how heavy was it? Yeah, it was too heavy. So they had to lift the whole mountain. They were carrying it, but the mountain was falling and crushing the demigods and the demons. And then who had to step in? Right, he came on the back of, picked up the mountain with one hand, right, and put it on the back of Garuda. Right? All the demigods, all the demons together could not carry the mountain. And with one hand he picks it up. Now what does that show us in our life?
Mountains of problems can be picked up by the Lord.
Yeah.
God is more powerful than the demigods.
That's a good point. He's more powerful than the demigods. All of them put together. What else does it show us?
If you do your effort, then Krishna will help you.
Yeah. What else does it show us?
Lord can do anything which looks impossible to us.
Very good. What else?
Demigods and demons are insignificant.
What else does it show us? Yeah, what it's actually showing us is that every time we're doing something, it's actually Krishna who is doing it. Right? But we haven't realized that yet. So we take the credit every time, but we don't understand it's not actually us doing it. We don't make all the arrangements. It doesn't all fall into place because of us. Just like the other day, you know, we had the Holi festival. Right, and it was successful, it was a nice event. So I was speaking to my mother on the phone, and she said to me, she said, you should be proud of yourself. I said, Mum, I didn't do a thing. I said, if it wasn't for Krishna, the whole thing wouldn't have even happened. Because every time I tried to do something to arrange that festival, there was an obstacle. And by the end of it, right, I was just thinking, I just waiting for this festival to be finished. I don't even want anything to do with this festival anymore. It's giving me nothing but a headache. But I understood that Krishna was making all the arrangements the entire time. So Krishna teaches us that actually, I haven't realized this fully, but he teaches us that it is not us who is doing everything. When something looks impossible, we have to pray to Krishna, Krishna, please help us, and then he makes the arrangement. Right? So it is not us who is doing it. It is Krishna who makes the arrangement for everything. Right? So when it appears that we are carrying something, it is actually Krishna who is above us with one hand, who is doing the whole thing. Right? And he is making it all happen. And if he stops assisting us, the whole thing falls apart. Right? So that is the nature of the material world. Right? We think we are the doer, but actually it is Krishna. So the demigods and demons, they thought they were carrying the mountain, but the mountain began to crush them, and then Krishna had to step in and... And what is the next chapter?
Lord Shiva saves the Indians by drinking
water. Which chapter is it? 6 or 7?
7.
7. Okay. What's it called?
Lord Shiva saves the universe by drinking water.
Yeah. So, Lord Shiva, his position is exalted within the Bhagavatam in several places. We saw in the 4th canto that his position was explained. Vaishnavanam yata shambhu. He is the greatest of Vaishnavas in the material world. So Lord Shiva teaches us a perfect example as a Vaishnava. Right? A Vaishnava is meant to be paradukha duki, which means he cannot bear to see others suffer. So Lord Shiva performs the highest welfare work. What does he do?
Drink the poison.
Right? He drinks the poison which is about to engulf the entire universe. Right? So this is the nature of a Vaishnava. A Vaishnava cannot see others suffer. So Lord Shiva, seeing that everyone is about to be destroyed by this poison which is going around the universe, he takes the poison and he puts it in the palm of his hand and drinks the whole thing. And why does he do that? Out of compassion for the living entities. So a Vaishnava is meant to develop this compassion. And Prabhupada explains, this is the mood of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. The Lord Chaitanya, he just wants to be compassionate and to save all the living entities in the universe.
Patita Pavana.
Yeah, Patita Pavana. Kali Yuga Pavana. And if you read the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Lord Chaitanya says, I am a gardener and I have so many fruits of love of Godhead which I want to distribute. But I am just one person. And I cannot distribute them. I need the help of everyone. So please help me. So that is Lord Chaitanya's mood. Right? And that is the mood that we need to develop. That we are assisting Lord Chaitanya in giving Krishna to others. So that was Lord Shiva's service. He thought, I will save the universe, so they have an opportunity to go back home, back to Godhead. Otherwise, there is no hope for them. So that is the mood of a devotee. He is selfless. And then what is chapter 8 called? So the demigods and the demons begin to churn the milk ocean, and what comes out? Surabhi, yep. Yeah, the cows come out. Aravata, Uchichai Shriva, the horse, the elephant. Kostubha Mani, yep. And then finally, Lakshmi herself comes out. Right. Now, Prabhupada points out, Lakshmi is meant to be used for Narayan. She belongs to one person. And Prabhupada basically explains that when something valuable appears, the demon or the non-devotee thinks, that is for me. So everything that comes out of the milk ocean, the demons think, oh good, that is for us. But a devotee, when something comes, then we think, that is for Krishna. Do you give all your most valuable things to Krishna? Do you give the most valuable things to Krishna, or do you keep the more valuable things for yourself? So the nature of a devotee, he thinks that whenever something is presented, that is for Krishna. That is the nature of pure devotee. So Lakshmi comes, and all of the demons and the demigods, the demons are beginning to quarrel. Finally, the Amrita comes. Amrita means nectar. Right? This is what everyone was waiting for. And the demons get the nectar, and then what do? They all begin to quarrel amongst themselves, which is what children do. Children want to keep the best thing for themselves, and what does everyone in the material world want to do? They want to keep the best thing for themselves. So there's a fight going on. So finally, in order to retrieve the Amrita, the nectar, and give it back to the demigods, the Lord appears as Mohini Murti. And she is described in chapter 9. So we don't hear a lot about her description. But. So they are the 8 chapters which we'll cover in our exam, which will be next Monday from 7 to 9. Does anyone have any further points?
They would like to add that a devotee always regrets when he has given distress, prays to the rock of protection, but a pure devotee regrets
Which chapter is that?
I think it's chapter 3.
What is the point?
Prabhupada says that a pure devotee, sometimes pure devotees also go through troubles. So sometimes to protect their Krishna consciousness, they pray to the Lord, please save us from this situation. But after that, the devotee always regrets asking the Lord for themselves. That's a good point. Context of the prayers of the devotee.
Same as Dhruva Maharaj. Any other points?
Prabhupada, I just wanted to know, see, if you drink nectar, then it means it protects you from having death. So those the demigods who drank the nectar, are they still alive? I heard that the demigods do die.
Well, the real question is not whether they're still alive, but the real question is whether they're getting enough vitamin D.
No, but
Amrita means it just makes you live longer, that's all.
Not forever.
Not forever, no. Because in the material world, no one can live forever. So. Yeah, it just means that you'll live longer. It's an Ayurvedic rasayana, like an Ayurvedic tonic. So if you take Ayurvedic medicine, you will live longer.
Okay.
But you won't live forever, that's all.
Maybe they start living forever, because Rahu is still there,
traveling
everyone.
Yeah, but everyone's life is limited. A Brahmana Bhuvana Loka, even from Lord Brahma's life. End of universe, everything is destroyed. The only thing which remains is the Vaikuntha planet. So, Amrita just means they live for a long time, that's all.
Okay.
They live for a long time. And they get plenty of vitamin D. TK. Any other points?
Prabhupada talks about the perfect communism or universal communism. Chapter 1. It's a very interesting one. Given an essay topic also. Prabhupada talks about how the world will move from democracy to dictatorship. Sorry, from monarchy, it has already moved to democracy, then to dictatorship, and then communism. Prabhupada says perfect communism. Not everything belongs to the government, it belongs to the nation. And if the leaders quite then can set you in the context of Manu, of why Manu ruled the kingdom, but he never claimed anything for himself. Prabhupada was always detached.
Anything else?
About cow protection, then what was pointed in the chapter where Lakshmi Devi comes up. Like how she was worshipped with such a value, so that Prabhupada talks that there won't be any peace and prosperity if there is positive of causes. People blame that there are calamities happening, people will be involved, but it will not stop to the cow protection.
Any other points?
The moon's, that moon is not a
planet. It's not a desert. Again, you're
the same
of people. So, it's the source of our vegetation. So, how can moon be a desert? Because of the moon, the earth is not a desert. Anything else? Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki.